Hey, ladies and gentlemen, man, we have another stakeholder spotlight, one of the best fans across four fan bases. We're always honored to have this gentleman on our platform. Well, he's family. KGYR family, he's family. One of the best sports fans that I personally could think of. The wonderful Carl at the C-Notes on Twitter. Brother man, it's going to be an honor for the next hour to get to know your sports fan story, man. How's everything, man?
Hey, pleasant good evening, Steve. It's been good to talk to you, and ready to have a little fun here on this episode.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let me ask you, before we get into your story, your sports fan story, let me ask you this. You've been an active participant, a stakeholder like myself, Chris, and everybody else. I look at our platform. When I say our, I say everybody who participates in it. It's not about me. It's not about Chris. It's about everybody. Like, how do you like, you know, being a part of what we do? You're a mainstay on our football platform. We love you on there. And you jump around on some of the other sports because we root for some of the, you know, same teams. Like, how do you like the sports talk with us and then also, you know, relating it with the fans in general, man?
Well, you know, it's always good to hear different, you know, perspectives from, you know, all the – if you just take the, you know, the ages of all the folks, you know, everybody, you know, kind of ranges in a certain, you know, from young to you know, those that are older. So you always get a sort of wide range of views from folks and, you know, folks that have experience, you know, whether it's a background in a particular sport, you know, whether they coached it or whether or not they, you know, worked intimately with any particular, you know, player or organization or just in the sport itself. So, and it, you know, you play it out with everybody else and, you know, to hear what they think, you know, on a daily or weekly basis has always been a very interesting thing to me, and something that, you know, I took hold of, I think maybe what, 5 years ago, I think it was. It was right around that period, I think, off the top of my head. And since then, you know, listen, you guys have taken me in, and I appreciate it, and it's been a good ride ever since.
Yeah. Now, let's get into it, man. I sort of know this. You're a Nick John Yankee Ranger fan, but let's say for the record, this is your show. This is about you, man. So let's break it all down, man. Nick John Yankee Rangers, am I correct? These are your squads?
Yeah, generally, for the most part. The Knicks, I've watched less Knicks than the other three by a pretty substantial amount over the last, I would say, 5 years or so. It got to a point, at least for me, and I think somebody, was it Chris that talked about it the other day on one of the previous shows, where, you know, the emotion of the Knicks dissipated, you know, based on a number of just different factors. And part of it as well was that when I was going to college, I had one of my best friends still to this day, Steve Javert. He worked at Madison Square Garden under Dolan and could give me chapter and verse firsthand of how the sausage was made down there. And I, when he would relay some of those stories to me, that got in my head. And while, you know, many people may not, let's just say, you know, they're only, you know, interest in the Knicks or the Rangers, you know, per se, you know, comes from what they see on the television screen. I had the knowledge of stuff that he would be going through behind the scenes where when the cameras are not on, and it beat him down. And I always remembered some of those stories. And as things got worse, as stuff came into the public eye over the you know, these last, let's say, 10, 15 years, I always was like, okay, you know, if it gets here where, you know, it's sort of an untenable situation, you know, they're not winning, they're not interesting, and you have all this other stuff that goes on back there, like, what is the point? And so for the most part, you know, me and the Knicks, you know, have sort of drifted apart a lot over the last, you know, number of years. You know, this past year, even though, you know, they had that surprise season and made the playoffs, I didn't watch many of the games, to be honest with you. I only caught on really at the end. And then when they played that playoff series, you know, the crowd clearly was, you know, they've been yearning for something just interesting, and they finally got it, you know. But even, and I knew, Steve, I knew something wasn't right when, I think it was the middle of the series, I don't think it was game three or game four. It was the weekend I was in Chicago that weekend. And I didn't watch one of the games completely. I just, you know, usually I would, you know, make sure I'm sitting, you know, whatever you got to do, 12, 1 o'clock, I'm going to make sure I'm sitting down to watch this. And I just did not have the interest. It just was not mm-hmm. there, you know, emotionally. Like, I'm like, okay, I'll miss it. All right, whatever. And I, you know, the season ended, I think, a couple of days later, and I just was sort of like, okay, you know. So it's just one of those things. The other three teams I have much more interest in than the basketball okay. team. It's just sort of that way.
Okay, let me ask you this. You say you had lost interest because your friend who worked under Dolan. Now, is this on the Knicks side of things? This had nothing to do with the Rangers. It was just more on the basketball side of things.
Yeah, he worked on the basketball side of it.
Gotcha. Okay, now let's back forward. Let's go back all the way back, man. When did you become a fan of all those teams? Like, what year? Like, around what time? What got you into football? What got you into baseball? What got you into all the sports? What year did you become? Who was your influencers or how you became a sports fan? Let's go all the way back to from day one.
Trying to think. I think the first baseball game, the first sporting event I ever went to, I think I was 4 years old, and I went to Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
That was with my aunt, and she had been, you know, from the time that, you know, the family and relatives had all sort of, you know, immigrated to the country. You know, they stayed, you know, she stayed in the Bronx, her aunt stayed in Brooklyn. So, you know, for me, when I would go down there originally, because I stayed in New York from the age of 2 until 12. So that period of time, you know, during the, you know, summertime, you know, spring months, you know, you get a chance to go to the game. Stadium's, you know, 10 minutes away. So you go down there. At that time, you know, they show those old videos now, or those old highlight clips of different, you know, games, not games, but, you know, different moments at Yankee Stadium, and they show the upper deck and it's completely empty. That is legit.
Right.
Like, those were the days. And that was the first one that I went to.
Maybe Stump Merle days?
Yeah, summer, yeah. Yeah, 88, 89, 90, 91.
Yeah, that's definitely Merle.
Yeah, Buck,
okay.
Yeah, Buck came around 92, it was 92 or 93. It was one of those 2 years.
Right.
But before then, you know, Yankees, at that point in the late 80s, you know, as I ended up researching later on, you know, the Yankees weren't all that good. They were sort of trailing downward. But
right.
at that point, I didn't know I was actually at the games until I would see pictures, you know, when I was about 7, 8, 9 years old. Like, oh, I was there. I did not know this. You know, the first baseball game I can visually remember and realize exactly, you know, where I was and stuff like that was, I think, 89. I was at Wrigley Field.
Okay.
My brother, for the summer,
oh, really?
Was working as the Cubs bat boy.
Wow.
So he was, at that point, he was 13. So he would be able to, they were, at least in those days, you know, he was able to go on road trips and he was able to do home games as a bat boy for the team. You know, I don't think you can even do that at his age anymore. I don't think those rules even allow that. But in those days, that was a thing. I remember at the end of the season, he got an autographed couple of, you know, baseball bats. I think he got about $2,000 in money, which if you translate it into today's money, may have been, you know, it was a, you know, very, I don't know how, I never asked him how that position even came about. He must have had some inside connection through something that he was doing, either youth baseball or whatnot. But, yeah. And so that was one of the games that I went to was a game against the Expos, and it was right around my birthday. So that was my first remembrance of that. And then the really, kind of the first event that I saw on television that I do remember of a New York team specifically was in my head. I was 6 years old, and it was the Giants-Rams playoff game, if you remember, in
1989.
Yeah, 90.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly where you're going with this. Go ahead, finish the story. I know I'm about to get mad. I know where this is going. Go ahead.
don't break any glass here. The Flipper Anderson game. That, you know, I never got a chance to get a tape or anything of that until I saw the actual replay of the entire game on YouTube maybe about 10 years ago. And it was interesting rewatching that whole, and I was like, you know what? I was upset then, and I was like still upset now watching all that play back and watching, like, damn, how the hell did they lose this? You know, but then the next year they won
Mark
the championship.
Didn't listen to this.
They win the Super Bowl the next year on the missed field goal.
Right.
And that was sort of like an exciting moment for me, as that was like my first sort of like sportsy, you know, moment. And here I am, 7 years old, you know, celebrating, you know, a championship. And then I think a couple years later, that's when the Knicks got good, about 2 years later, when Pat Riley became the Knicks coach, and I was that they would beat the Bulls. And that was my real – and that's – you know, actually, I'll transition that right now. You know, I got into the Knicks that 91-92 season when Riley was the coach, because I remember my uncle had made a promise to me. Now, that year, if you remember, the Knicks, I think, had lost to the Bulls, I think, going into that series, like 11 times in a row. It was something, some number like that. But yeah, the Knicks somehow they had a great series against the Bulls, and it looked like, you know, maybe they were going to pull like this all-time upset and win game seven. And I remember my uncle telling me, he was like, hey, listen, you know, I'll make this promise to you. If the Knicks beat the Bulls in this series, we're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, which was going to be, in this case, in Cleveland. It was going to be cheap, you know, cheaper to get tickets, obviously, than going to, you know, Chicago Stadium, or obviously the Garden. Tickets to, you know, for those two teams, and at that particular time, it was going to be impossible. But it was going to be easier to be able to go to Cleveland, whether it be flying or driving, and just go into the game that way. Unfortunately, the Knicks lost by 30 in Game 7. So that never happened. And I was so upset, and I remember I had hated the Bulls from that day. Like, I was like, you guys took my dream from me. And then clearly, you know, that was, you know, the masochism of Knickdom then set in, because then the next year, obviously, we know what happened in the Charles Smith game, and then the John Starks thing the next year, and you know, Ewing McSpin, you know, all the bad Nick moments that you can think of that took place in the '90s to end seasons. Like, you know, it was just basically like, you know, just having your head hit over the head with a hammer repeatedly. It was one of those things. And that's how my Nickdom started right there with those few years. And then as far as hockey goes, I think I went to my first hockey game when I was about 8 years old. Just kind of on a casual thing. I didn't know anything about hockey at all. But I remember just watching the game in person. If anybody has ever been to a hockey game in person, I'm telling you right now, it is the most enjoyable and most exciting sport to watch in person. It's not even close.
It's top two.
Nothing
for me,
is basketball.
Man. It's top two for me. It's top two for me, my guy.
Football. I'm telling you, you know, football in person is
hockey's better than
to
all
watch
that.
Yeah, hockey, I'm telling you. And Brian Leetch was my favorite player growing up. Right. And he, you know, the fact that he made, you know, went all those years, made it the Hall of Fame, like he was one of my guys. Messier came along that 91 year as well. And that they looked like they were going to potentially make the cup that year, but got upended by Pittsburgh on the route to their, I think it was their second straight Stanley Cup that particular season. And so that, you know, sort of, I was like, okay, you know, I didn't watch as many Ranger games as a kid, obviously, but, you know, when they got to that point in 94, when, you know, they had that great year that ended up in a cup, you know, at least I had some sort of like base knowledge to work off of. So when I'd be able to watch the games, at least I knew, you know, I had seen a couple of the players, you know, over the previous couple of seasons, and was able, you know, from Richter to, you know, Sergei Zubov, Jeff Bukaboom, Brian Leetch, and then Messier was there, Adam Graves, and so on. And then as they, you know, began to import some of the other guys that year to win the cup, and then finally winning it that 17th of June, 1994, same day as basically everything else in the world that day, OJ, Nick Game 5 in the finals and all that. Like, that was – that was the parade, not a mistake. A couple of days late, a couple of days earlier was the day the Rangers won. But, like, that was, you know –
that year.
Like, hey, like, this is so cool. You know, here I am 10 years old and really, really cool thing. And that's sort of where it started and where it, you know, took off from there.
And don't forget in 94, also your baseball team, the Yankees, were in the hunt. I thought they were a title contender, and I thought the Montreal Expos were on a roll that year as well, but the strike happened. So you had the Yankees, you had the Knicks, you had the Rangers, all doing well at that same 94 year mark. Yeah, I vividly remember that. Absolutely. And
yeah,
I agree with you.
Yeah, that was classic. Looking back on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Hockey, is, for me, is top two. The other sport I say you got to see in person, and TV doesn't do it justice, is boxing. Boxing and hockey in person, I've said that as long as we've been doing this. Like you, I totally agree with you. The energy in a hockey arena in person, because as you, I always say this on all the episodes, like the product on TV doesn't do it justice because you can't see everything in the game because the way the camera angles are, you don't see the line changes. You don't see how they set up on defense and a lot of things picked up by the cameras a little too late. And the energy is just different in hockey versus all the other sports live.
Correct. And, you know, the other thing too, you know, sitting up in, you know, in the 400 level, you know, at least when I was, you know, mm-hmm. 9, 10, 11 years old, you know, I felt like I was just sort of like seeing dots on the ice. So I didn't really understand what was going on. But I ended up mm-hmm. learning more about the game through the video game. I had a Sega Genesis, mm-hmm. I bought the NHL hockey series, and so that was how I was able to get familiar with the players in the league. So at least I could, you know, obviously people who knew who Wayne Gretzky was, or Brett Hall, like those were the, you know, a couple at that time, you know, some of the, you know, really Jeremy Roenick was another one on the Blackhawks, Doug Gilmore on the Maple Leafs was another one of those times. But, you know, like when you start, you know, you start playing the games and you start realizing, okay, well, these players are on this team, these players are on this team, that way you can at least have a visual image of who you're watching. Sometimes you just, you know, you're just watching the game. You don't know, but you know, mm-hmm. you end up, you translate, you know, your, you know, the virtual, you know, world to the real world. And it's like, okay, now I can sort of piece things together. And it made, at least for me, maybe it not worked for anybody else, but for me, it made the game much more understandable. And I was able to at least be able to understand what was going on in the game and be able to have a better feel, understanding, and love for it, as it turned out.
That's fantastic. I never did that, but that is, I think that's a great way to pick up the hockey game or the game of hockey and learning what the rules are. Shit, I wish I would have thought about that. I wish I would have thought of that. I don't know why I didn't do that. But this is interesting. I like this, man. You said you got your influence from your auntie, who was a Yankee fan, right? And then you said that your brother worked at Wrigley. Did not know this. This is why we do this, Carl. Like, this is dope stuff that your brother worked at Wrigley at 80. Now, how was it going back? Like, let's go back to that. Like, how was it going to Wrigley at that time? Because that's like old school Wrigley. With the vines on the wall,
yeah,
in the outfield.
Yeah, that was the day before. You know, when, you know, the video stuff that you see now and all that stuff in the park. You know, today, you know, that didn't exist then. You know, the rooftops, the way you see them now, were slowly coming up at that point. I believe, I'm not 100. I'd have to look at some tape. You know what? I take it back. You know, I think they may have, it may have just been in its infancy right around that point. From about 87 or so on. I remember the next year they had the All-Star game at Wrigley Field, and a number of – as I looked at some of the – there was a video online on YouTube of the game itself where they had – because they had a rain delay for about – I think for about 40 minutes or an hour, and they were doing reports. Pat O'Brien was from CBS, was doing them on one or two of the rooftops across the street from the park.
Okay.
So I think that's when – just starting to become a thing out there. But, you know, at that time, and my parents, my uncles will tell me this story. You know, when they first immigrated to the country from Belize, mm-hmm. The Wrigleyville you know today was not that way in the mid-70s when they showed up. That was
– okay.
It was whatever, you know, whatever term you would like to use to describe – a bad area. That was what Wrigleyville was at that point. Actually, it wasn't even called Wrigleyville at that point. It was called whatever they want to call it, whatever it was called at that point, you know, Lakeview at that point. You know, you folks would go to the Cubs games, and then if there was a concert, let's just say at the Cubby Bear across the street, which has been there for so long now. But outside of those two things, and if it was at nighttime, that was not the place and not the area that you wanted to be in at all.
Okay.
Like that's, but then as time went along in the 80s, as the city was able to move those people out, those folks out, and invest and put money into development in that area, from what to what you see today is the result. Basically, it's like it looks like the circus over there now when you go down there, but that was not what it was, 35 or 45 years ago. It was just, it was two different worlds. Put it this way, think of what you see outside of Yankee Stadium and that surrounding area right now. And think of that. Okay. That's, if I can give a pitch, that is what, the area outside of Wrigley was. People don't hang out, in the Yankee Stadium area for anything but Yankee games. That's not how it goes. That's how Wrigleyville at that point was in 1975, 1980. That's what it was.
Okay. That's an interesting point, because this is where a lot of the sport, that particular sport, baseball, is. They have these new stadiums and they duplicate what Wrigley Field is. Yankee Stadium, to a certain extent, there's a little strip of bars right outside Yankee Stadium, Boston especially. Like, a lot of these stadiums are now where, as you already know, a village of sports bars around it, so they want fans to eat and drink before and after the games. That's how you build up your revenue, and that's how you can keep people to come back and keep on going. I did not know. I'm going to be honest. I did not know about that, about Wrigley Field back in that time. Because, I know the teams, I know the players, I know the history, but as far as the little intricate details, like how you're explaining it, it never crossed my mind. And it's good to know. I never seen it on a documentary, and this is good information to share, because I didn't know about that, is there a ranking or a favoritism of the teams that you root for? Meaning the Yankees was your first team, I'm gathering. Are they your favorite team of the teams that you root for, or is it equal across the board? Does the Yankees trump the Rangers or the Giants? Or where's your level? How would you rank each team that you root for? I think the Knicks are at the last, based on what you said. So where do you stand? Who has the high? What's the ranking for each team?
Yeah, the Yankees are first and only for the reason that because they're available, 162 days out of 180 days, you're there a lot. Even if you miss 20 days, you're still there a lot. I know how I watch the games now, even before the pandemic has started. I get home from work, game is on, boom. Or if there's an afternoon game at work, and I'm at work. These days now, I bring my tablet with me, or before I, try to sneak in and watch it on the work computer and try to, minimize the tab when the boss would be coming. That would be how, just so I don't, so I try not, I'd probably, be able to watch about, anywhere between 85 or 90% of the games easily. And because it's, 6 months of the year, subtracting spring training and playoff baseball, that's where, I would be, that's where my interest number one would lie. And I remember, there was, I think it was, what was it, 2009. I remember, yeah, that was the year the Yankees had last won the World Series. And I was in New York that weekend, and I had tickets for the ALCS for the Yankees to clinch on in game number six. But at that same time, that same weekend, the plan initially was that, okay, the Yankees are going to play game six against the Angels that Saturday. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go to the Giant game the next night as they're playing, I think they're playing Arizona, I think it was. It was a Sunday night game. And so that was going to be the initial plan. But what happened was that Saturday, the Yankee game gets called off because of rain. So now you've got a Yankee game and the Giant game going to go head-to-head at the same time. Well, for some folks, football would trump the baseball because there's only 16 football games. Well, for me, that was never going to be the case. At that point, the Yankees were hot. Yankees are hot. This is the thing. I'm going to Yankee Stadium. The football can wait. You can tell me the score in 3 hours. And that's how, given the options, in those particular situations, I will always take the high-level baseball game over the football game every single time.
We are in the same boat. We are in the same boat. See, and that's the thing about us in particular, because we are Nick Giant Yankee Ranger combination fans of the varsity blue teams, the varsity teams, basically. You know, you come across all kind of sports fans. I mean, there's a lot of us out there, you know. But, of course, there's going to be probably more so only Yankees and Yankees only, and they don't have a rooting interest for the Giants. Or there's only Giants, you know, they're only all in for the football. They don't give a rat's ass about the Yankees, where you have situations like this where you root for multiple teams in different sports where, hey, man, this is my squad right here. These games mean a lot more than a week five game right now on the football side. And it doesn't necessarily mean I love this sport more than this. It's just more about the importance, the magnitude of this playoff type of game versus a regular season game, even though I love both things the same. Because sometimes I think some fans get it misconstrued. Maybe you could answer this as well. Like, how do you feel about that? Because I think some fans will look at a combination of fans like you, right, and say, all right, well, I'm more of a you're more of a Yankees fan right now than a Giants fan, but you love the Giants just as much as the only Giants only fan, the Giants fan only. You see what I'm saying? Like, have you ever like come across fans that they think just because you root for multiple teams in multiple sports that doesn't mean you have less love for that team that they're only for? Well, what's your thoughts on that?
Not really. When I think about it, I think there are some folks, you know, let's just say, I'm trying to think of an example. Hockey guy, I probably couldn't use hockey as an example in this particular case. But let's just say, you know, a fan of their particular sport, you know, pick whatever sport it is. You know, the person mm-hmm. X may be, you know, die in the wool in that team so much to the point where they are sort of insulated from everything else. And I'm not that. You know, I have multiple okay. interests. And so, you know, I won't devote all of my, you know, energy and all of my, you know, resource, you know, into that one particular team. You know, other folks can do it. I just can't. It's not the way I've grown up. It's not the way that, you know, I view sports. It's just not that way. And, you know, like I said, it may not be for everybody, but it is for me.
Mm-hmm. All right, I get what you're saying. I understand it. I'm with you. Like, if the Yankees are in the playoffs and the Knicks and the Giants got some regular season games, I will be keeping a peripheral eye on that. But right now, it's about the Yankees. No different if the Giants were in the playoffs and the Knicks and the Rangers are in session. And, you know, like, they're in, like, what, games 15 to 20 in their regular season. It's the same thing. Like, if the Giants are in the playoffs, obviously you won. It's pretty much an elimination or go home. The magnitude of those type of games in the playoffs mean a lot more. It's not like a best out of three or best out of seven when it comes to football. It's one and done, you know? So I get that. I was going to go back and say,
other,
go ahead.
Well, the beauty about that, Steve, is because of the way that the sports are sort of spread out, you know, the chances of that level of a conflict come up so rare that, you know, it's almost like it's a once in a every like 3 or 4 year, even if you get that occurrence. So I'm trying to think of like the times where this has happened off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. And you know, the one probably closest thing that I can recall, and it doesn't involve a team that I particularly root for, but I've seen the videos of when this happened. It was 86, and this was the year that the Giants would eventually go on to the Super Bowl that year. But in one particular right. case, they played a Monday night game against Washington, which also was being played on the same night as Game 7 of the World Series between the Mets and the mm-hmm. Red Sox. And so, and I remember the visual they showed when the Mets won the game to win the championship. Now this is before cell phones, so nobody had those. Words started to leak to Giant Stadium that the Mets had won the World Series, and there was this incredible cheer that went up in the crowd that night, you know, for the Mets, you know, winning it all. And I remember thinking, I'm like, you know, if you had the option, you know, if you're, you know, if you're a fan of either of those teams, would you go to, you know, Giant game where, you know, hey, listen, at that point, you know, Giants are really, really, really good. Or, you know, do you tune in and watch, you know, the Mets game? These days, you know, get two TVs, or a laptop or whatever, you put both of them on and you just plow through and go from there. But, you know, in those days, you know, you probably didn't have much of an option. You usually just had, you know, one television and you had to sort of, you know, pick and choose, flip the channel if you could, or do whatever it was you were going to do that night. And I think the baseball game, I think, had four times the viewership as the football game. So that kind of gave everybody the answer as to what was more important.
Yeah, the Mets were hot, man. In the mid-80s, they were the ticket in town in the mid-80s. The Mets were cooking. And the Giants were, as you already know, dominant as well. So that's, you know, I think a lot of those mid-40-year-old men and women, that's where you see a lot of the Giant-Met combinations. Because usually if you're a Giant fan, you're a Yankee fan. That's kind of what it usually is. But there is that special age generation where they're Giants and Mets because of that mid-80s period where the Giants was cooking. You know, after the Bears were, like, running things like 84, 83, Giants were right on the come up. And then the Mets were cooking when they, you know, with Doc and Strawberry, Keith Hernandez when he came over from St. Louis. So that was a period where, like, a lot of those fans came together. Like, the older, you know, 45 to 55, they were huge Giants Mets fans, kind of breaking the, like you said earlier on, like, you know, the Yankees were rebuilding when you first came on and I first came on as a sports fan in the 80s, you know, late 80s, you know, they were turning around things and stuff like that. But let me ask you this, man. Your favorite sports moment for each of our squads, man. Like, I know you kind of highlighted, you know, when you became a fan of each squad, but what was your favorite sports moment for each squad? Favorable. You know, if you want to bring, we could bring up the bad moments after that. But, you know, as a sportsman, what was the most memorable of all, you know, for each squad right now? And then we'll get to the other teams, you know, that's not our squads as well.
Let's see. I'll start with baseball. I won't use, let's just say, a World Series win as the result. Like some folks would say, the '96 World Series. I'm gonna use a different one, but not because the end result worked out. And that was the Aaron Boone home run in Game 7 of the 0-3. Yes. That was. Because the reason I give that is because if folks remember that season, the Red Sox thing wasn't at a fever pitch going into that particular season at all. It really sort of became a thing about like mid-July that year, and all of a sudden it was like, okay, maybe, you know, we've got something here with these two squads, maybe these two teams, maybe the best two teams in the league. And then I remember, and this is probably, you know, blasphemous thinking about it now, but I remember buying tickets for games 3 and 4 at Fenway Park for the ALCS. The Red Sox had not won their series the previous round. They had put them on sale, and I had just bought them just on the off chance that I can, you know, that I can go. And so the Yankees had won their series the next day on like a Sunday, but the Red Sox still needed to win to get to the ALCS that year. And it was probably my first and only time I was rooting for the Red Sox to win and play the Yankees. I wanted to do the Yankees, Red Sox, ALCS.
What? Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
I was like, let's have this go down. And that series was so, from the time that the Pedro, Manny, Kareem Garcia, that sort of thing went down, like it became like a pro wrestling thing. Like, the heat, the heel heat and the emotion and everything, you know, that was going on to get to that seventh game where they were losing and then rally back, and then Boone hits the home run. And I just remember just like when he hit the home run, I just remember like laying falling on the carpet in my house and just like out of energy, like celebrating, just like, just drained like all of the life out of me. Like that, like if anybody, there's a I think a video called, I think A Rivalry Renewed. I think it's probably on YouTube, maybe out there. MLB Productions made it. Like the emotion of everything that had led up to that particular moment was incredible. Now the next week they lost the series and didn't win at all, so that kind of spoiled, a bunch. But for an individual like moment, like that one was it. Like it, you know, and obviously things did not play out the next year and everything. We all know that. But
that's gotta be the worst.
Yeah. Yes, I mean that was for a singular moment like that. Boone home run, 03 LCS was one of my favorites. Sports.
Let's go to
The Knicks.
What was your favorite? Oh, you want to go to the Knicks? We can go to the Knicks.
Yeah, you know, look, I'll go to the Knicks. We'll make a risk. The LJ four-point play game.
Oh, okay.
Was for a singular moment. Like, that one was like, whoa, this is crazy. You know? That one was definitely, and I think the next that couple games later when they won game six to go to the finals, and I just remember the sound in the building on TV that night of everybody celebrating, and you know that was a really cool moment as well. Because prior to that, I'm trying to think of like specific individual moments of that run, and I can't really think of any. Maybe I'm missing. I'm thinking off the top of my head. You know, I mean, the John Starks dunk, not real. I mean, that was to win a game to go up 2-0 in a series. But outside of that, I was trying to think through those years. There wasn't really a standout moment that you know, maybe the Knicks winning game seven in Miami in 2000, which sort of like culminated that rivalry right then and there. Yeah, you know, that there was so much hate and dislike for me that winning, that last game of that rivalry right there was a very cool moment as well. But for a single moment, the LJ 4-point play was definitely a favorite of mine.
Okay.
Football wise, the Giants winning 42 will always stand out.
Okay.
Probably for more reasons other than football, as I think about it, because that was the first time, really, that at that point, you know, the stuff that we do now. Well, I mean, I've retired from it now, so I don't do any of the, meetups or gatherings anymore. But like that Super Bowl win and the championship sort of culminated like a month of me with folks that I had never met before in my life, and suddenly coming together, like 20 or 25 of us, and celebrating that win the way that happened, with that moment that we saw with the Tyree catch, then beating the undefeated, and all that stuff that came along with it, and what followed after that was, something that I will never forget ever. That was awesome. And then with the Rangers, everybody's going to pick the Stanley Cup, and that's obviously the obvious one to choose from.
Right.
But for a singular moment, Derek Stepan's Game 7 goal win against Washington in 2015 will stand out as my favorites, because they came back from 3-1 in that series just like they did the previous year. And I remember being with everybody that night when Steps scored the goal to win that series. And I just remember we were all on pins and needles for about three plus hours that night, just sort of like not knowing what was going to happen. And then the jubilation and explosion when he finally scored to win that game was an incredible special thing to take in. Obviously, it didn't work out the next week, or 2 weeks later, I should say. But, for that, little moment in time, folks will always say, hey, where were you that night when this happened? And I can always point to that as something that I can, kind of like give like point and point details of a lot of things that took place, you know, before then and after then. That was a great night.
You know, I'm going to defer on the bad moments. We could always get to that at a future date because there are so many points we have made. Yeah, we definitely do. We probably could do a part two on this, man. Because, man, we could spend 2 hours on all this stuff you already said alone. But there's some things you just said that I said, oh, man, we got to touch on this. Because a lot of people who may listen to the platform when you come on to talk sports with us, let them know, like, you ran organizations as far as sports fan, you know, sports fan clubs. Like, how did you get into that, you know? And, like, how much hard work was it putting it all together? If you want to go back to the infantry of putting all together what you've done as far as a sports fan club leader and how much fun do you like it, the stress, the work, the hard work in it. How long you done it for. And then also, you know, we talk about going to games. If you could sprinkle that in as well, because, I mean, this is about you and sports fans too, because you've been a veteran for 30-plus years going to home games, away games. Like, the favorite venues. I know you touched on it on prior episodes when we talked sports, but, you know, lay it all out. And I got some other questions before we get off. But give us your thoughts on, you know, how was that running a sports fan club? And let them know what you did. And then, and as far as going to games and so on and so forth with the teams and how they come about.
Yeah. Yeah. How that all started. And I thank the Giants for this because on their website, they don't have it on their site now, I don't think. They had what they called a fan registry of fans that lived in, you know, different parts of the country. If not the world, I think it may have just been the U.S. at that time. This was like 2006, I think it was. And I just remember one day, like, just like, look, I think I got an email from somebody, just saying, hey, I saw your name on the fan registry. I don't know if you live specifically in Chicago anymore or whatnot, but, you know, I was trying to get people, you know, together to watch a Giant, you know, Giants game. I was like, well, okay. You know, I was a veteran of, you know, for a couple of years of NFL Sunday Ticket. So for me, like watching the games, you know, I got the games at the house. I got the, you know, the food and the beer and the liquor and, you know, the stuff, like, you know, I don't need to go anywhere, but all right, I'll do this. And I think the day we did, there was like, you know, 7 or 8 people that year. I think it was like the 06 season. So that, you know, not much really happened that year. And then, you know, we did like one game. I think we didn't do it again. I went to two of the games that they did. It was a game, I think it was against Carolina and against, I think it was Dallas. I think those are the two games. And then the rest of the games, I stayed at home. Late in that season when this whole thing happened. And then we got together, a few of us, for a playoff game. I think they played the Eagles that year. And, you know, a nice crowd, you know, maybe like 20 people or so like that. And that was pretty much it. The next year, we went back to that same place. I remember going on opening day, contacted the same guy who reached out to me. That time I said, hey, you know, what are you guys doing for opening day? He's like, let's go to the same place we went to last time. Not knowing that when we showed up there, that the place had become a Philadelphia Eagles new hangout. And I was like,
what?
Oh.
What?
Okay. I was like, okay. Like, you know, I was like, well, so cool. Much for being able to, you know, watch games here. You know, that's not gonna happen. So, you know, so at that point. Yeah, so at that point, you're like, hey, listen, okay, there's, you know, there's not going to be anything for us to go or anything like that. So I'm okay, I'll go back and watch the games at the house, you know, like I've, you know, always been doing. You know, no skin off my back. That's perfectly fine. But then the last game of the season had come about that year when they were playing New England. And I remember going back to that fan registry, and I was like, you know what, let me try this. Let me just take a chance, you know. And I just sent an email blast to the people that had, and at that point, I think people's email addresses were on the site, so you can just reach out to them just like that. And I said, hey, guys, you know, I know we haven't done anything, you know, in Chicago this year at all for games, really. But, hey, since it's the last game of the year, it's on a Saturday night, you know, let's, you know, however many people can respond, you know, let's get together one day, you know, for this game and, you know, just, you know, nothing really major. and
in the body of that email, you say, hey, man, you know, let's all get together so Brady could throw his 50th touchdown pass against us. Was that in the email, too?
I should have worded it like that, you know. But, yeah. But I remember getting there that night to this. We went back to the exact same place that had become the Eagles place. I was like, listen, I don't know any other place where I'm familiar with off the top of my head. I'm like, we're just going to go right here. We're just going to go right back to the same place and just see how it goes. And I think that year the Eagles didn't make the playoffs, so that didn't make – so we, you know, kind of had the lay of the land. And I remember just there was about maybe 20 or 30 of us that actually showed up. And I was like, holy crap. I'm like, okay. You know, so, you know, Giants lose, no big deal, as it played out. And I said, hey, guys, let's – you guys want to do this next week? I think they were playing Tampa that week. I was like, let's just try this out. Yeah. So I sent the same email out to the same people and said, hey, listen, you know, things worked out pretty okay, you know, this last game. We're going to do this again for the playoffs. Let's just, you know, just see where it goes. You know, obviously, you know, if they lose the next week, then there's no more, you know, games to hang out with. And if they happen to win, well, we'll just keep on doing it. And they won that game. When they beat the Cowboys the next week, at that exact point, I remember my buddy Mike now, who's, you know, married, got three kids. I remember him telling me that day, he said, bro, we're all in now. Like, there's no turning back. I said, what do you mean? He's like, bro, we're gonna keep here until the season is over. I said, all right, well, let's do it. And then that snow game, not the snow game, the ice game, the minus whatever it was, in Green Bay, that was probably the most emotional game I've ever seen myself, because of all the things that were going on that day. They get the Super Bowl, and then at that point, more people are starting to show up, you know, for those, you know, the Super Bowl as it turned out, and then they win the championship. And I remember this dude Shabir mentioned after we finished celebrating, he was like, "Dude, next season, we're getting our own watch games." And I said, all right, let's make this happen. And that's how it really all started. The next year, all of a sudden, we got this, like, flush of people just coming out of the blue. I think it was Yelp and Meetup, and I think Facebook wasn't really a thing at that point, I don't believe. So we couldn't, you know, we didn't really have the ability to do any, you know, market it like the way you see marketing now. You know, so it was just sort of like, you know, word of mouth and just putting stuff online just to put it out there where if you can Google it, the, you know, SEO can just populate something. And that's how it really started. And we just took that and ran with it from that day forward, you know, for about a good, 10 years or so, 10, 11 years, right up until the time the pandemic hit. You know, I'm not sure how, you know, how they're going to go about doing things now. From what I understand, I'm not sure what's happening. I sort of, you know, was going to concede, even had I stayed last year, I would not have done any gatherings for games last year based on the circumstances. But, you know, folks decided that they were going to do it until the city shut everything down.
What was one thing in that experience putting this all together for sports fans alike that you learned from it, like what things you learned on the fly about, or, you know, organizing on a sports fan level, like what was some things that were some hardships in it? Was it some, anything you learned from it? Any particulars you'd like to share on that? Or,
well, trying to get the particular, you know, bars that we were looking at, you know, to commit, you know, to the idea, you know, that was of showing our games, you know, at that point. You know, there are not, to my knowledge, and maybe I'm wrong, or maybe I didn't know it, but, you know, showing, you know, Giants games or New York games of any type just was never a thing, right? So you're going to these places sort of just blind, and you're just basically telling, you know, these places like, hey, you know, we like your place here. What do you guys do on Sundays for games outside of, let's just say, show Bears games? And you try to get the responses that you get. And then you used to sort of say, well, you know, hey, listen, you know, we have this concept that we're thinking about, you know, is, you know, would this be something that, you know, you can, you know, help, you know, accommodate, you know, we'll bring you, you know, 30, 40, 50, you know, people a week, you know, for these games. And, you know, you got, if you guys can, you know, I don't, you know, we're not really asking at this point for anything in particular in terms of like drink stuff. Like, we'd had no leverage. We didn't know, you know, we had no pass to go on. So we're just like, hey, you just mind putting the games on the, on some of the TVs here with the sound and, you know, sort of like let us go. And there, you know, we got one place to agree. And, you know, I think after the first game, I remember the girl that we worked with, we promised her that we were going to bring like 30 people. And I think that day, on opening day, it was a Thursday night game, I remember. I think instead of like 30 people coming, I think we had like 70. She was not prepared for that. And I think that sort of like set the pace or set the tone for, you know, what was to come, because clearly there was a market inefficiency that had existed where there was a demand for this, and we just happened to, you know, be able to accommodate, and folks brought their friends and folks would tell other people, and, you know, slowly by slowly, I think at one point there was one game, I forgot who we were playing, where we basically like, you know, took up the whole bar. It got to the point, I remember the last game, there was a playoff game where literally the bar would normally open at 11 o'clock and we had folks lined up outside the bar at like 10, and we took up every spot of the bar. People were standing up the whole game because you couldn't sit down, you know, and they were short on servers because they didn't know that we were going to actually show up in the numbers that we did, you know, because we had never done anything like that before at all. You know, it was like New Year's Eve and suddenly out of nowhere. So all of a sudden, like, you know, now at that point we kind of realized like, wait a second, we've got a lot of folks that really like this stuff, you know? And so as we progressed, I just remember asking the next place that we went to the next year, you know, because we needed to get bigger space. We had outgrown our space. Let's put it that way. And we went to the next place. I remember asking the guy that ran, I said, hey, do you mind showing Yankees games? Would that be cool? And he was like, sure. And I mean, that's how, and then that year, that was the year the Yankees won the World Series. Like, that's how it played out. And then as we moved on further, a couple years later, that's how we brought the Rangers on board. We just sort of asked. We found folks had an interest in it, and we just played it out that way. You know, if there was not an interest in it, we wouldn't have done it. But clearly there was a market for it, took advantage, and we proceeded. And it got to the point where folks realized, okay, hey, if I want to come here for this game, I can come for this, I can come for that. And it became a thing that, you know, we ran with for those, you know, for those years. You know, I don't know what's going to play out now. I mean, obviously the Rangers have not been as good since, you know, basically that day that I was mentioning about 2015. So it's been kind of tricky the last, you know, those number of years. You know, maybe the Knicks will do something in the future. We've never really had a big Knicks thing at all because there hasn't been a situation that's presented itself for it. And then, you know, the Yankees, we don't know what's going on with them. So it's really just the Giants at this point, and then, you know, everybody else.
Right. Let me shift real quick. Thanks for the information on that, man, and letting people know your story on how you ran the operations on that. But let me ask you this, because before we get on, I had to make sure we get these two particular questions in there. Number one, you know, okay, on a sports fan level, what, you know, how excited do you get for home games and away games for your squads? Is there a method as far as, okay, I see these teams, baseball, football, hockey, I'm going to visit these venues. What's your favorite sports venue, stadium, whatever, regardless of sport? And also my other question, I can squeeze that other question. I'm going to hold on to other questions. It's about you, the psychology of you, Carl, the sports fan, as far as objectiveness versus emotionalness. Because I think you're one of the most objective sports fans we know. Most fans are emotional. You know, there's always a percentage. You know, if you want to look into a sports fan's breakdown on if they're, you know, emotional, excited, objective. I think you're kind of more on the 80-20 side, objective, the emotional. I'm going to hold off on that. Let's get back to that. But how you look at it as far as going to home games, away games, is there an art to it? You're just winging it? I mean, you literally just came from the baseball game last week, pretty much last weekend. So what's the matter? What's the psychology behind that, man, on a sports fan level?
I get far more excited for road games than I do home games. It's always been a thing.
Why is that?
Like road home games, I'm far more reserved, mainly because you're in an environment with basically your peers, right? You know, everybody's rooting for the same team. You know, everybody kind of knows each other because of like season tickets. You know, this family knows this family and this person knows, you know, everybody sort of knows each other. But when you go on the road, there is a different emotion quotient that's involved. You're going into, you know, quote unquote, you know, particularly in football, it's just a hostile environment. In baseball, it's kind of different. It's a little bit different, but, you know, in certain places, you know, there's places where you feel as if, okay, there's only a few of you guys here. You know, you're kind of, you're at a loss. And then there's some other, you know, road games you go to where, you know, there's about half of you guys in the build, you know, half of your own people, you know, fans in the building. So it's kind of like if you remember when we went to Tampa that time 2 years ago, where it felt like maybe 50% of the building were Giant fans, like that kind of feel as compared to, let's pick another city. I went to Pittsburgh a few years before that. You know, if you go to Pittsburgh, there may have been, let's say, 20% of the crowd is you. So out of, you know, the strength, you know, the feeling in numbers, it's a different thing. Like you sort of have to, I love the road games. Fenway Park has been my favorite road stadium to go to, mainly because it's just that part has always been fun for me. I love the banner. I love the going in there. Sometimes, you know, you feel like, you know, you have to, you know, your head's on a swivel, but you know, that kind of deal. Like I've always liked that, especially in the past, like in the early 2000s, like that's how, you know, you always had to, you know, be a little bit worried, you know, be a little on guard. But that's sort of how I've taken the psychology of home and road games. What was the other question?
No, I was going to say,
about the emotion.
You personally.
Oh,
you're right. How would you are you more ejective? I would think you're more ejective. You don't. And if that's the case, which I believe is true, but you can answer that. When did that change happen? Like you became an emotional fan? Because it seemed like you were an emotional fan. Like we all have been there, you know, in our earlier years as kids, teenagers. But when did you start becoming more, okay, I like my team, but they're going to lose because I'm more factual than emotional. Like where did that all kick in as far as that within you?
That left for me sometime in the mid to late 2000s. As I think the one book that really sort of set me on course on that was the Michael Lewis book called Moneyball, where he, you know, it was sort of like an explanation of kind of not necessarily how the sausage is made, but a breakdown of the process of how, you know, a team can be successful based on limited resources and also sort of challenge some of the traditional ideas that had existed in the past that, you know, that even today, you know, you still see the sort of like, you know, push and pull between, you know, quote unquote old school ideas and newfound, you know, technological advances. And I remember like one of the things that had become a thing back, you know, in those times was like this idea of clutch hitting was a thing. And one of the questions was like, is David, you know, for like a couple of years, this sort of fight was going on. Like, is David Ortiz a clutch hitter? And I always would ask myself, like, well, what does that mean exactly? Like, does he have like some like superpower when the game is on the line, or is he just really good because he's really good? You know, like, you know, the way that I in a past life, you know, I would say, oh, this guy just has, you know, something special in him or something like that. But then you delve deep into it and it's like, wait a second, this guy actually is really, really good and just happens to be really, really good in all type of situations. Like he doesn't, you know, become bad because the game's on the line or becomes bad because it's a playoff or whatever. Like he's always good. And so I remember at that point I was like, okay, I had to challenge myself and say, wait a second, let me challenge some of my past beliefs and just sort of like deep into the idea of some of these like things, like, you know, this guy has grit, you know, or this guy, you know, this kind of, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, wait a second, let me, you know, and I remember when I was working as an intern at Comcast SportsNet and also, which is now NBC Sports Chicago, and also CBS Radio, which is the local sports station down there. You know, when you're in an environment with a lot of folks that like sports, you know, and work as we do, you know, kind of, you know, making the sausage and stuff like that as the sport, you know, as producing sports content, you know, I would get into these discussions with these guys and I would, you know, essentially challenge their ideas that they would, you know, espouse and put out there, because I'm like, I don't necessarily believe what you're saying is true. You know, you're saying this guy, you know, you're saying, you know, this team is going to win because, you know, they have more heart than the other team. I'm like, well, what does that mean? what are we talking about here? Like, exactly. You know? And so I was like, okay, well, let me delve deep into the process. Right.
Let me,
you know, if a team is bad, why are they bad? You know, they're not, you know, let me look deep into it. And then I find out, okay, well, this is kind of why they are bad. Or why is this team good? Okay, well, this is kind of why they are good. They do these things. Their process for, you know, for developing and achieving success is this, and they are achieving the correct result. Meanwhile, the teams that are not doing that. And so I said, okay. And so as time would evolve, that is sort of how I would, you know, take a look at my thinking and then look at like in-game type stuff and say, okay, well, what's going on here? You know, is what the traditional idea of how this should go, is that really true, right? Like, there is this whole idea now in, you know, that's still going on, and, you know, and to me, I believe, you know, like, and so I became, you know, more into, you know, data and information. You know, there's like this weird fight that's been going on, and I really don't totally understand totally exactly between, like, you know, certain sports fans and, you know, certain people in sports media and sports management, in terms of like the analytical revolution. Well, if you just look at the definition in Webster's Dictionary of analytics, all that is saying is that it's data and information. But yet for some strange reason, we actually have, and I still can't believe it either, like fans and people out there that like have this like sort of weird anger towards analytics. And I'm like, wait, if you just replace that word with data and information and then say, I hate data and information, like some people actually say the following, like, I hate analytics in baseball. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, if I just replace that word with data information and then repeated the same sentence again, I hate data and information in baseball. Like, do you not know how idiotic you would sound? Like, just think about that for a second. And yet there has just been push and pull fight that has been going on for about 15 to 20 years now. And you know, this battle, it has been, you know, it's still going on. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what the deal is exactly. Like, you know, I see it in football with like teams that go for it on fourth down or go for like 2-point conversions. And there's like anger that comes out, like, how can you possibly do this? And I'm like, no, the data information clearly says you should do this. But there's this like weird sort of like, well, 30 years ago they wouldn't do that. I'm like, that's a different time. Like, that, like basketball, teams take more 3-pointers because it is statistically more advantageous to do that than take 18-footers. But yet somehow there's like this weird pushback from certain people against it. I don't totally understand why that is. I have the information I can present to you to prove why I'm doing this. And yet, I don't know, you know, maybe it's just people are just so stuck in previous methods of practice. But like anything mm-hmm. in life, like, we evolve, right? Like, we don't do the same thing today that we would, that, I mean, we don't do things 40 years ago that are done today, you know, done today. Like, we've, you know, we drive now, right? You know, we don't we don't walk as much. We have air conditioners. We don't rely on the air from outside. Like, we have televisions that have, you know, that have cable, you know, what you call it, like, you know, apps on built into the television. Like, we don't have to use like 10 different devices anymore. Like, we have evolved. And I'm so for some strange reason, it's like sports is like the one thing that like folks want to hold on to from like some like sacred day, you know, in the past. And I'm just like, guys, like, this train has left the station. You're either going to get aboard this train or it's going to leave you behind. It's the old like idea of Blockbuster and Netflix. Like, Blockbuster thought that they could exist while Netflix was coming along, while Blockbuster no longer exists anymore. that sort of thing. And you know, I'm not going to argue with people about it anymore. I'll just present the information. But the evidence is clearly in one direction compared to another. And I think those that try to fight it, you know, are in a losing battle. And that's how my thought of, like, objectiveness comes from. Like, I always will base my information and opinions based on data and information and just challenge anyone to just prove the data information to be wrong. If you can prove it to be wrong, have at it. But I'm challenge you. I'll challenge anybody on it. And I think what gets lost sometimes is that folks will then take, you know, my objectiveness as like pessimism or, you know, hatred or, you know, fill in the blank. And I'm just sort of, you know, like, hey, listen, these are the facts. You can dismiss them if you want, but that's what it is.
I get it. I get everything you're saying on that. Makes a lot of sense to me. It's from an analytical build-up era in that mid-2000s to definitely in the late 2000s, like you said, when you were coming along. This is good information, man. This is we were like really tapped into your brain right now as far as your sports fan ideology and also your history, man. As we come to the conclusion of this episode on the spotlight with yourself, man, give us your final thoughts on just where you are right now with the state of sports. You kind of touched on that last week, but if you could just you know, if you want to double down on it, on where you are as a sports fan, even, you know, the motion or the objectiveness, the state of sports itself right now in this current climate of going to games, everything you said, if you want to summarize everything you said in the last hour, please feel free, man, as we wrap up, man. It's been an honor to have you on, man, on the spotlight. I know people are going to enjoy this, man, as we share this.
Hey, I appreciate it. I think the state of sports is really just in a transition period right now. The evolution of high definition television, the evolution of access to all of these sports, has really played a role in how we consume information, how we look at things. You know, back then, I think I talked about this on the previous show. You know, back then you couldn't see your, you know, player X or, you know, or team Y, maybe a handful of times when, you know, because of the, you know, there were limited, you know, channels. If it wasn't on ESPN or if it wasn't on your local TV station, you basically were shut out. You know, NBA League Pass didn't exist. You know, NFL Sunday Ticket did not exist. You know, if you wanted to, unless you got lucky where, you know, the Cowboys were playing and they were really good and, you know, your local station would probably carry them like 8 or 10 times, you know, out of the year. These days, you can watch any player, any team, anytime, anywhere. You know, that saturation of product has really played a huge role in how we look at teams, how we look at individual players, you know, how we form our opinions, because back then you couldn't form an opinion on something you couldn't see. These days you can. You know, we can watch, you know, Yankee games from anywhere now, whether it's on the beach, whether it's, you know, in an office. You know, you don't have to be relegated to your house. How that goes for road games, it's easier now to go to road games than it ever has before. You know, in the 70s or in the 80s or even in the 90s, pre-StubHub, pre-eBay, pre SeatGeek, you know, finding tickets for a road game would be very hard. You'd have to go to a ticket broker. Now, if you and I want to go on a road trip to, you know, let's hypothetically say New Orleans this season for a Giant game, you and I can just go on our tablet, type in, you know, the StubHub app and get 2 tickets, get a flight, and we're right there, you know, on the weekend in which they're playing. Like, things are more accessible. But also with accessibility also comes a level of, for some people, of lack of interest, because it's, you see it, you're always able to see it, but because of that, sometimes because there's not, you're not left wanting more. And sometimes I think there's a frustration, at least with some folks, that, okay, I've seen this so many times, I don't need to see this. And that may be a good thing, that we should be left wanting more and not be given so much product. I don't know how that changes in the future, because television has expanded so much to the point now where, hey, there's going to be Amazon Prime, Apple Plus. There's always going to be uses for live programming, and it's not going away. So you either accept it or just, you know, just leave and not watch, because it's here to stay. The money is too great. The access is there. And, you know, we as consumers have to sort of come to that conclusion. And if we don't want to come to that conclusion, well, then we just get left behind.
Hey, Carl, man, we had a fantastic time as dialogue on yourself as a sports fan on the Stakeholder Spotlight, man. It's an honor, man. These are things I'm glad I learned, man, as far as, you know, the family with the baseball, you know, going, you know, I didn't, you know, it doesn't surprise me with the football, with, you know, what was their most important game. I would never have guessed the Aaron Boone home run game in 03. I would never have guessed that. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that about how you felt about the Knicks because of that, you know, that friend you had that worked with Dolan. But nonetheless, man, this is a fantastic story. Man, I can't thank you enough for sharing that with us so we can get this out to sports fans to hear your sports story, man. Because, like I said, when it comes to all-around combination fans, man, you're one of the best, man. And it's glad to have you and everybody who comes on to share their stories, man. This is, we love what we do, man. Appreciate that, man, here on the Spotlight.
Hey, thank you very, very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And, of course, we'll get back into the football this offseason, probably next week. Got to get with Chris. I don't know if it's next week or probably next week, because it would have been this week. But nonetheless, man, shout out to Carl at the C Notes on Twitter, right?
Absolutely.
All right. And then outside of that, man, well, you can hear Carl. He hops on, talks hockey with us and the football and the baseball. You've been on a roll with us, man. Thank you very much, man. It's all family. We're all family. Like, whenever people have time, they want to, you know, speak objectively or vent. And this is why we're here, man. And the spotlight, a lot of things, man. Like you said, with your brother at Wrigley Field in the 80s, we never had a clue. And I'm glad we learned that about you, man. This is fantastic, man. Carl, of course, we're going to share this on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Apple Podcasts and Spotify, all that, man. And we're going to get this in circulation and share this with other sports fans and hear your story as they're working and making time go by, traveling, and so on and so forth. Shout out to Carl, man. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yep, yep. And bleed blue, ladies and gentlemen. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Bleep blue, 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 bleep blue.